I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Insights and analysis continue. Here's Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
Well, it's so good to have you along on the program today. This will be my, as a place sitter and a seat warmer, it will be my swan song today, I promise. Now, I was originally asked if I would fill in on this show for like 3 weeks, and that was 3 months ago. And it's been fun. It's been a joy. But making way for my friend Lee Lonsbury is great. And so tomorrow, at this very moment, this very time, Lee Lonsbury will be launching his brand new radio program here at KSL News Radio. And I'm really looking forward to that. So on the program today, we're just going to wrap up some loose ends. And one is one that I've honestly been a little worried about. Chris Stewart and I have been friends for a long, long time. Chris and I are good enough friends that we can disagree with one another and even energetically disagree with one another, and we still like each other and consider ourselves to be close friends. And the last time Chris and I talked, we had a dual purpose. One was the impeachment hearings that were going on, and then also the e-cigarette flavor bans. And we just didn't get, and it was totally my fault, we just didn't get around to talking about the e-cigarettes. And at the end, I apologized. I promised him that we would make that good. He was a very good sport about it all. But this is my last chance, basically, to save my honor. And Chris Stewart very graciously agreed to appear. And I told him the only way impeachment will be mentioned is if he brings it up. So we're going to talk about other things that Chris is working on. David Amott will be joining us. Yesterday, we got into preservation. Here in the downtown Salt Lake City area, it was a sad, sad, sad day. There wasn't one text we got yesterday. If Mayor Jackie Biskupski is listening, not one text yesterday, not one conversation with anybody yesterday who was pleased with what is happening with the old Utah Theater and who thinks that knocking it down and building, you know, downtown housing high-rise is a good idea on the rubble of that grand old building. We also called Mayor Jeff Silvestrini from the Mill Creek area because the old meeting house, too, which is privately owned, and there are things you can do and cannot do in that case. The city, I guess, really looked at preserving the building, even moving into the building as either temporary or long-term city hall for Mill Creek, but unfortunately, there are just things going on with the building, and it was deemed not practicable. So two really important structures. The one I kind of get. The other is really a crying shame, and shame in every sense of that word. But David Amott will join us today from Preservation, Utah. And again, I was challenged yesterday by some of our texters, and they said, Doug, some of them, I think, assumed I had a little more clout than I really do. The people they were suggesting that I personally phone call yesterday, including President Russell M. Nelson of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. He is not on my speed dial. I will admit to that. Some others are, but I'll be bringing their thoughts and honestly my thoughts up with David Amott too. Is it truly over and done? Is the silver bullet, has it been fired? Is the stake through the heart? And yesterday when I talked with my friend Pete Ashdown, who is not known for giving up on anything when there is any chance at all, said that, it, you know, kind of to use the old term, the fat lady has sung on that one. Daniel Boyce will lead us. You know, there's an interesting video that is going around right now, and this will automatically turn some people off when I just mention who the spokesperson is, because he is considered to be one of the Hollywood elite. No, it's not Robert De Niro, but it's Michael Douglas. And they're just talking about how divided we are right now and what it used to be like versus what it is today. What are some of the ideas? What are some of the things that need to be done? Interestingly enough, when six ideas were laid out, I agreed with them. And there were some other things, too, that sometimes if we can just look at the idea itself, maybe then, you know, shooting the messenger or discounting it because of a messenger. And other people will love the fact that Michael Douglas delivered it. But we're going to talk with the local connection there, Daniel Boyce. What in the world is Represent Us? What are the goals? Is it active in Utah? And we'll get into that. Golden Globe nominations actually came out yesterday. We didn't have a chance to talk about them. But it's interesting who is or what is nominated at this point. And we're hoping to be able to talk. We've reached out to the Republican Party leadership. We have reached out to the Lieutenant Governor's office because over the weekend, Utah Republicans, through their central committee, and partly because of the appeal from Senator Mike Lee, kind of is still clinging on to the rancor, still clinging to the technicalities and whining, honestly, about Senate Bill 54, which enabled the dual route to get on the ballot. And again, they may have done nothing. These hardcore, the hardliners of the Central Committee, all of a sudden, if certain things are enforced within the Republican bylaws, it could delegitimize the candidates from being a qualified political party into, well, we'll walk through it all, but you know, this, boy, talk about the horror movie where the stake through the heart never works. It keeps rising from the dead, and it's the walking dead within the central core of the Republican Party that are keeping this nightmare alive. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, we'll walk through that. And then, at the very end of the program, it will be a great honor to pass along the torch to my friend Lee Lonsbury, and we'll talk with Lee about the future of this time slot here at KSL News Radio, what the show that he is going to host will encompass. And all of that is here at KSL News Radio today. And, of course, in order to continue on to talk about the impeachment articles and so on, play some of the sound clips from earlier today, I need to pass through the gate, and the gatekeeper is...
This is your drive. It's not drive time. This is Robin Garfield. I was yawning. I wanted to say my brain was checked out.
It could be drive time. You
this
never
is your
know.
Drive time afternoon, morning, evening show. I don't know. My dogs woke me up at like 6:15 this morning. I'm a little out.
Don't you love that?
Oh man! All right, Doug. This is our. I'm not going to say last day because it's radio. You'll be back. You know we.
Speaking of the nightmare that will never end, no. The body that will not stay. You know, I joked about this yesterday. You know, if I make many more fond farewells, they're going to put the mirror under my nose just to make sure, is he really gone?
No, we joke around here that there's like eight of us actually that work in radio. They just keep recycling us
That's
around.
Right.
And we all know each other from all these different stations and from
That's
years
true.
And years. So you got to watch out. They'll bring you back. Since this is the last-ish day,
last-ish.
I figured I could just do whatever I want to do,
okay.
Which is unlike the other days where I have to keep to a schedule. So really quick, before we get into the quiz, I thought we should replay the clip I played for you on your birthday,
yes.
If you remember this. It was when...
Now, I do have a little bit of a memory left.
It was a clip I dug up from when I was on your show in 1995.
Mm-hmm. And you were how old?
12 then? Years old. I called into the old Doug Wright show. So let's go ahead, Josh. Let's hit that.
Let's go to Robin, who joins us from Bountiful, Utah. And Robin, welcome to KSL.
Hi.
Good to have you here. I understand you're 12 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
Have you been to Hogle Zoo lately?
Oh, yeah. I love it.
What do you like about Hogle Zoo?
I just love all the animals, and I'm just an animal freak, and I'm just so mad that everybody's just going down on Hogle Zoo.
My daughter is an animal freak, and if she can maintain her grades and keep things up, she would like to become a veterinarian.
Me too.
Yeah, yeah. When you've gone through Hogle Zoo, have you ever seen anything that bothers you?
Well, one thing that kind of bothers me are the lion cages. That's the only thing that really gets to me.
I'll tell you, you should have seen them when I was a kid. When I was a boy, back in the old dark ages.
Yeah, things have come a long way. But, you know, and I think all of us, you know, sometimes as much as we love the animals and love the zoo, so it goes through our mind, you know, I wonder if that space is big enough, or I wonder if that water is fresh enough, and, you know, things like that. But overall, I'll tell you, it's a whole lot better zoo than I can remember when I was a kid.
Yeah.
What would you like to see at the zoo that's not there, Robin?
I don't know. I kind of like some domestic animals.
Yeah. Yeah, they do have the petting area up there,
yeah,
where they're kind of semi-domestic animals like goats and stuff. Robin, we appreciate your phone call. What are you going to do? Are you going to call the zoo and support them? Are you going to write them a letter? Or?
Yeah, I hope so.
All right. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling and voicing your opinion here at KSL.
How cool is that? You know, she sprung that on me back on October 3rd, and your dad dredged that up on a cassette tape when his little darling was calling into the infamous Doug Gratt
show. Like when
show
you hit play, you put the cassette in really quick before you know, you got to scramble around, make sure. Yeah, so I just wanted to, that's a fun clip to have. I told my son was on with Boyd Matheson a few weeks ago, really quick little hit, and I said, there you go. Next generation on the radio.
It's a family tradition.
All right. So thank you for indulging me. I will read really quick because we're always out of time. Two headlines. Number one, did you hear about Bananagate in Miami with the art on the wall? Have you followed this story? They duct taped a banana to the wall and sold it for $120,000.
Why didn't I think of that? You know, I sold a Pepsi can. You know, a Diet Pepsi can on the air for Quarters for Christmas one year. And this great person that I know who works in restoring old videotapes and things like that and transferring your 8mm and so on, he bought it for, I can't remember what it was. Was it like 400 bucks? Something,
oh, wow.
Something ridiculous. But no, I'd never thought of taping a banana to a...
$120,000.
You know, there's a lot I could do with my remodeling in Eureka for $120,000.
Right. He got the man who bought it got a certificate of authenticity that he is allowed to replace the banana as it rots.
Uh-huh.
And then somebody did walk up and ate the banana off the wall. This is a whole story. It's crazy. You have to go read this. Somebody broke it, ate it. He gets a new banana that he can take home with him for $120,000.
Yeah.
You know,
but
art.
It's still a legitimate piece
still
of art.
A legitimate
because
piece
you
of
have
art.
To replace the,
it's a commentary. I don't know. Pick one. Global warming or pandas or something. I don't know. Fur. All right, here's the last one.
This is the last one?
This is the last headline. But it's
am I going to get all misty on me?
Maybe.
Okay.
Well, this one I thought of this morning.
Okay.
It's a Christmas question.
Uh-oh.
Doug,
yes.
Is there a Christmas toy that you never received for Christmas that still haunts you?
Ooh.
I have one.
Ooh. You know, Santa Claus was pretty good to me. I got the electric train that I wanted. Mm. I got the little stuffed monkey that I wanted that my kids think is the creepiest thing in the world.
You still have it?
Yeah, Jocko. I'll show you a picture of my new grandson with Jocko down in Eureka this weekend. No, I really can't. Santa Claus was awfully good to me.
That's impressive. No dredged up memories deep down. Every time you see your mom, you get a little twitch in your eye.
There was one time I wanted a 10-speed bike, and I got kind of a lesser model. But
a 9-speed.
Yeah, I do know some more like maybe 1-speed. You know, it was it was kind of a refurbish if I remember correctly. But
I'll tell you, mine was a Lego pirate ship. I asked for it one year. I doubt my parents remember. They were the best. I received, I did not want as a child for much.
Right.
I had an idyllic childhood, but I still remember asking for a Lego pirate ship and not getting it. And every year for Christmas, I still think, I'm not going to go out and buy that thing for myself. I'm going to go buy it and build it and put it on a shelf and tell my kids they can't. Oh, I'm getting a picture here.
Yep. There you go.
Is sufficiently creepy.
There's my little grandson.
It's the same size as him.
Sitting with my...
Is it a plastic face?
Yeah, it's a plastic face, little plastic hands and feet.
And ears. Uh-huh.
And I called him Jocko.
Jocko. And he's survived.
He looks like he should be out of a Chucky movie.
He really does. I have to hand it to your wife for keeping this thing on the shelf all these years, because this might have gone the way of the quiet dumpster in our house.
All right. There we go.
Oh, that's a good one. All right. That's all I've got for you today.
That's it.
Audio clip, banana, and unrequited Christmas wishes, which sound like yours. Yours were met for the most part.
For the most part, yeah.
Mine really were, but I still always remember that Lego.
Well, here, as long as I'm showing off.
Oh, look, we're looking at pictures of grandkids now. Don't mind us.
Yeah, no, don't mind us. We're just passing by.
Conrad?
Isn't that cute?
How old is he?
Yes, he is, as a matter of fact, tomorrow he will be 3 months old.
Oh.
Yeah, so that was taken on the... Maybe we better put that up on the...
I'm going to go give it to our digital team. I'm going to hold it up here because anybody on the KSL News Radio app, sponsored by Any Hour Services.
Okay. Oh, see?
See, I'm a producer here.
Wow.
I get the official. I'm sure they can all see that.
You got that right. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm getting a thumbs up. So join us for the after party when I show Doug pictures of my kids and he shows me pictures of his grandkids.
It's great radio.
It makes your pictures. They always say, make sure...
That's right.
Make sure you have visual themes in your radio program.
Exactly. Exactly. All right.
That is all, Doug. Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. It's been a real joy. I grew up with you, and being able to sit here every day for the last few months has been a real pleasure.
It's been a lot of fun. You know,
thanks, Doug.
Thank you for, and especially for the time you produce the show as well. Now with, of course, Boyd Matheson. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll quickly run through the impeachment articles. What exactly is it being proposed by the Democrats in Congress that the president be impeached and kicked out of office for? That's coming up next.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
More afternoon news and in-depth coverage with Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
Before we go any deeper into the program, there is a gigantic donkey and elephant in the room today, and that, of course, is the impeachment. We're not going to talk a great deal about it, but I do want to just replay some of the highlights of the events that occurred this morning and after Speaker Pelosi very briefly made the initial announcement. Then things were turned over to Jerry Nadler, who is the chairman of the Judiciary Committee in the House. And he laid out the articles of impeachment, and here he is with the first article.
The House Committee on the Judiciary is introducing two articles of impeachment, charging the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, with committing high crimes and misdemeanors. The first article is for abuse of power. It is an impeachable offense for the President to exercise the powers of his public office to obtain an improper personal benefit while ignoring or injuring the national interest.
And then there was another impeachable offense that, again, Chairman Nadler laid out for us.
When the House investigated and opened an impeachment inquiry, President Trump engaged in unprecedented, categorical, and indiscriminate defiance of the impeachment inquiry. This gives rise to the second article of impeachment for obstruction of Congress.
Obstruction of Congress is an interesting one. You might recall back in the 1990s, when shoes were on the other feet. And this is what really troubles me. And I know sometimes it's tiresome when somebody tries to look at both sides rather than just absolutely hammers down one side, takes one side versus the other. But one of the problems that happens when you actually do try to care, you do try to actually figure out what is the truth, and you do try to occasionally listen to both sides, the problem is things just sound so familiar, and then you realize that what is being so resoundingly criticized right now by Republicans was basically what they were doing and what they were saying under Speaker Gingrich at the time, that had Democrats so riled up. And, you know, memory is a terrible thing. Trying to be fair is also a terrible thing. Life becomes much more complicated when you try to be fair. Life becomes so much more complicated when you actually try to listen to both sides, and it becomes really obnoxiously uncomfortable when you actually realize that the weeping and wailing from one side today was the absolute defense or the prosecution that they were offering not long ago within your memory. It really is kind of troubling, to tell you the truth. The hypocrisy in Washington, D.C. is off the charts. Okay, so what else happened today? Now, of course, Republicans had to respond to the articles of impeachment today, just as Democrats back in the day when they felt that their guy, their president, although he was all of our president at the time, Bill Clinton, Democrats responded much as the minority leader, Mr. McCarthy, responded this morning.
We watched in a hearing a Democrat constitutional scholar that did not vote for President Trump say this was the weakest, the thinnest, the fastest impeachment in the history of America. He then went to say if there was an abuse, it'd be abuse on the Democrats to move forward. The speaker must not have listened to that hearing.
It was interesting, too, that again, not so much from the Democrats today, although they are not without this ploy of brandishing the founding fathers, but Kevin McCarthy did indeed brandish one of our founding fathers, Alexander Hamilton, which has been much in vogue on the Republican side, talking about, you know, you hear, we don't have this sound except in the full thing, but he said, Alexander Hamilton warned us of this day. Well, Alexander Hamilton and all the founding fathers warned us of a lot of things. And what's interesting, and again, this I know this annoyed some people, but anytime you try to look at both sides, that does that. It's, again, you know, you can absolutely solidify at least a degree of allies if you just absolutely only see and only pontificate on one side of the issue. But what was interesting, it was John Meacham who wrote, John Meacham quoted several things that were interesting, but it was Ron Chernow who actually wrote the book on Alexander Hamilton that everybody has raved about, and of course that the play is loosely, very, very loosely based on, or inspired by, I'll put it that way. But Ron Chernow said, you know, we are in exactly the position today that had Alexander Hamilton concerned for our republic. Thus, he wrote so many of the Federalist Papers, the articles, and so on, really specifying and expanding the powers of the presidency, but also took the time to, in meticulous detail, walk through what the impeachment procedures should be. And the argument from Ron Chernow, who wrote the book on Alexander Hamilton, was that this is precisely what Alexander Hamilton was talking about in his various writings, the situation that we are in today, and the concerns. I want to be clear about that. Chernow was arguing that Alexander Hamilton, based on what he has written on the presidency and impeachment, would be extremely concerned about what has been going on and happening with the presidency right now. But then again, boy, it's boring to be fair, isn't it? All right, let's take a break. We will come right back with more of the program today, and that includes a conversation with David Amott, who is with Preservation Utah.
The afternoon insights and analysis continue. Here's Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
We had a texter a moment ago on our Utah Community Credit Union KSL text line. Say, isn't there something else to talk about? yeah, we do have other things to talk about. And one is something that we fleshed out quite a bit yesterday, talking about historic preservation. Whenever I have the opportunity to, or am invited and am given the latitude to do so, I always say, can I mention three of my kind of pet issues that I think are absolutely essential for the quality of life that we have here in the state of Utah. Now, this assumes kind of the bread and butter stuff. Obviously, education. Obviously, you know, we need balanced budget and things like that. But I am such a firm believer. Anybody who's ever been forced to listen to me give a speech somewhere, there are three things that I always try to include. One, open space. Open space is so important. Green space within any highly populated area. The other thing, too, is mass transit. You've got to have mass transit. We just can only build so many lanes of highway. We need to have mass transit. And then historic preservation. I am a huge believer. I think it does so much. I think it ties us to our past. I think it reminds us of who we are. It becomes a tourist attraction and makes our area more desirable for people to come and visit. And so thus yesterday we were talking about the old Utah Theater and other aspects of preservation. David Amott joins us right now with Preservation Utah. David, thank you for taking the time and the invitation.
Thank you, Doug. I appreciate this invitation very much.
I am really concerned about historic preservation, and I don't consider myself to be a building hugger or whatever hugger. You know, some things just have to go. I get it. They're way beyond their time. They're way beyond any practicality. Purposeful reuse, adaptive reuse, repurposing is astronomically expensive. But, boy, I think we've missed a lot of opportunities, and I really believe. And, boy, you know, I wish that Mayor Biskupski would call in to give us her thoughts. We called over to the city. We got no response. But
right.
But the Utah Theater, to lose the Utah Theater is a shame in every sense of that word.
Well, it is sad, especially since it came into the city's hands with the city saying that they would preserve it. This, of course, was several years ago, and between 2010, when it came into city hands, and now, a lot has changed. But nonetheless, it still is a treasure and something that could really, I think, foster a lot of interest, arts, recreation in downtown, not to mention preserve this unique chapter of the city's history. At one time, we had somewhere between 10 and 15 of these theaters. And now we're really just down to one, and that is the Capitol Theater.
Right.
So to have lost all of those theaters, I think, is a tragedy.
Well, it's interesting to see other communities that have preserved them. I think of Logan. They have their stage theater, the Eccles Theater, and then they have been preserving around the corner, again, the Utah Theater up in Logan.
Right.
I think of
right.
what Murray is doing right now. Murray is working very, very hard to do everything possible to preserve the old Murray Theater. I look at what Ogden did with not only the Eccles Convention Center, but the Egyptian Theater right next, which is one of those great Egyptian kind of Art Deco type era movie palaces. And, you know, why can't we do that in Salt Lake City, for heaven's sake?
You know, there is a hefty price to preserving a building like the Utah Theater. What I find, though, is that when cities invest in these buildings, while there might be some opposition initially to the cost of rehabbing, refurbishing these types of landmarks, a year, 5 years, 10 years, certainly, you know, 20, 30 years down the road, everyone looks at the building and think, well, of course the community saved this. It's
right.
obvious that this would be something that the community would invest in and save. The trick is just to get over that an initial resistance and accept the expense, and then it becomes obvious this is something that, of course, you would do. I see that with, of course, City Hall here in Salt Lake, the city-county building. That was a hefty lift for the city, but the city went ahead and did it, and now we think, of course they did. It's an obvious building to save.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with another landmark, for example, Provo's library, which was the BYU Academy, the main BYU building for a lot of the 20th century.
And that wasn't that long ago. I can remember I went down and was at an event in the new old, the public library that was on Center Street, and we were working very, very hard on that. And but boy, it was sketchy. I mean, a wrecking ball was not far
right.
from the walls of the BYU Academy.
It was seconds from going down. Same thing, you mentioned the Egyptian Theater up in Ogden. I mean, it took someone mortgaging their house to save that.
Yeah.
But now we look at that building and think, of course the community would save it. It's a landmark. It's an obvious touchstone for all of Ogden, or if you're in Provo, the library, or Salt Lake, the city-county building. So what is initially difficult to take on becomes then the obvious choice, you know, the moment the building is fully renovated 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road, of course you would go ahead and save these landmarks because they are such identity makers for the community.
Yeah, and I wonder how many people, and when we talked with Pete, he laid this out, how few of the old Pantages theaters even exist now. Two have been restored and have become exactly what you described. In hindsight, of course, why wouldn't we save this? Thank heaven we did save this, but this one seems to be destined now for the wrecking ball. Pete Ashdown, I've known him a long time, and when Pete says, you know, I just don't see a path, do you see a path? Is I've been chided by many of our texters and some of our, listeners who have written in and have said, Doug, come on, this can't be over, is it?
I hate to say yes. You know, I've been teased by my colleagues here in the office. They say that this is one of my brick children.
Yeah.
And I can't let go. And I don't want to let go of this brick child of mine. And I know that there are people out there in the community who are working hard still, even at this 11th or maybe it's the 12th hour, to save it. But I do not see a path forward. I don't think the political will is there. I think that legally, my understanding is that it has already been signed over to the developers. And so how this will be saved is, how this could be saved is a big mystery to me. Not saying that people won't try. I just don't see how the path could lead that direction.
Sounds like the goodness of a heart or the magnanimous spirit of somebody, maybe an insightful, rather creative builder. You know, communities have built around historic and over historic buildings before.
Right.
I've seen some magnificent things that have been done where the very, very, very historic building that actually occupies kind of a relatively small footprint has just been built over and around. And, you know, who knows? And I'm sure that the first thing that would be weeping and wailing would be the cost of doing something like that. But I don't know. I guess I'll still hold out some hope until the wrecking ball goes through the side. Maybe before we run out of time here, what are some of the major victories? You rattled off a few that have been done governmentally. You look at the earthquake situation with the Utah State Capitol, and a lot of people are going, oh, come on, don't compare the Capitol, don't compare the city and county building to a little old theater. And, you know, but still, I mean, they're in our DNA, they're part of our soul. What else have we saved in Salt Lake City that we can take great pride in?
Well, I think that the establishment of historic districts back in the 80s, 70s and 80s was really the age where a lot of the important historic districts along South Temple, or later than that in the Central City Historic District, have really done quite a lot to preserve the character of Salt Lake and make you feel, especially when you're in those particular neighborhoods, that you're in someplace unique. You know, the University Historic District, there are some wonderful buildings there. Think of just driving along South Temple. You know, it wasn't so long ago that most of those mansions, you know, the really important buildings on that promenade here in the city were being threatened. And the Historic District really helped with that. You know, the refurbishment of the governor's mansion when it burned in the 90s, you know, that was a major lift, but one that the city made possible. Of course, we've already talked about the city-county building. Recently, I'm thinking up on the University of Utah campus, the old historic library that then sort of transitioned for many decades into the Natural History Museum, that was recently saved, and the university did a beautiful job on that. Charles Shepard, the historic architect, led that effort. So we have maintained, we have been able to save a lot of our past. It's just sad to see prominent landmarks like the Utah Theater disappear without having really thought about preserving them in those creative ways. Right. The same sort of levels of creativity we've shown in preserving some of these other buildings I just cited.
You know, and you mentioned South Temple, which was described by many people as the grandest boulevard in the West, from Chicago and St. Louis all the way to San Francisco. It was the grandest boulevard you could imagine. But even then, I remember the old Hogle mansions that were on the west side where I think Governor's Plaza is now, and the old Cohen home, which is there still, thankfully, but the old Dern mansion on the corner of 7th and South Temple on the south side. I think of the losses. I think of Wally Wright's efforts many, many years ago when he was restoring Trolley Square to at least try to save you know, some of the stained glass, save some of the magnificent woodwork that was built into Trolley Square. Much of that now has sadly disappeared, but I know Khosrow Semnani and others who are owning Trolley Square now are trying to bring some of that back. But, boy, you know, once it's gone, it's gone.
Right. They say with, you know, historic preservation is a hard game, one that I'm very invested in, obviously, but they say, you know, you demolish a building that's gone forever. You preserve a building, you preserve it for 20 years. So it's this constant effort, but
right.
One that I think is very worth making because there is so much of our identity, our heritage, our history. The very texture of the cities that we live in and love owe a lot to the buildings that were left to us by our ancestors.
Well, absolutely. David, just a final quick thought, and then I've got to run. What is in the crosshairs next? What are you working to preserve next? What is threatened?
Well, I got a bombshell this morning when I came into the office. I learned that a huge portion of the historic district along Main Street in Logan, 9 buildings, many of them on the National Register, are threatened with demolition.
Wow.
So that will occupy most of this week, and I imagine will spill into the weeks and months to come.
Boy, absolutely. David, this will be the last time I'll be hosting this portion of our programming at KSL. Tomorrow it turns over to Lee Lonsbury. But keep me posted because we could talk about all this stuff on TV as well.
I would love to do that. Thank you so much, Doug, for your time.
Thank you, David.
And your interest.
Thank you, David Amott, with us. Coming up next, we're going to talk with Congressman Chris Stewart. The impeachment word, at least as far as I'm concerned, will be banned from the conversation. We're going to talk about e-cigarettes, flavors, and so on with Chris Stewart.
More afternoon news and in-depth coverage with Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
Well, this is the last day that I can make good on a promise that I made to our 2nd District Congressman that we would indeed find time to talk about the e-cigarette flavor ban that he and others are encouraging the president to get behind. And Chris, thank you for saving my honor and reputation today. This is my last day when I could make good on the promise.
Well, I appreciate that, Doug, but you know what? I don't think it's really your last day because the public is going to demand this
comeback. There'll be tar buckets boiling at the front desk demanding for my remains or something. But, Chris, let's talk about what is I've talked to Mitt Romney. I've talked with you before about this, and this is really a big deal. I was reading through some of the statistics that are out there on just the growth in vaping and among our kids and high school students. Walk us through this concern, would you?
Yeah. You know, this is something I've been involved with since probably my first year in Congress. And originally we sold vaping as kind of a smoking cessation device, right? Something that would help you to quit smoking. That's how they initially marketed it and how they got many of us in Congress to say, okay, this is a good thing. But that's not what it is at all any longer. And I remember last year sitting in one of our appropriations markups where I held up a Slurpee, and it looks like a Slurpee, and you swear it's a Slurpee. You open it up, and it's a vape. And they're clearly not marketing grape Slurpee flavors to 45-year-old truck drivers. These are clearly marketed to children. And here's a remarkable statistic, and I could go through a bunch of them, but here's one that people should remember. 81% of the kids who tried e-cigarettes started out with flavored e-cigarettes and said that was the primary reason they wanted to do it. And these guys are marketing to our kids, and it's nuts, and we got to change it.
Yeah, this is the old thing, and I'm old enough I can remember when the tobacco companies, I can remember one image, it's in my head, where there are the big, you know, the CEOs of the tobacco companies, they are testifying before Congress, and they are basically swearing that they have not seen definitive proof that tobacco causes the health problems that they at the time and we now all know is a fact, heart disease, cancer, everything else. And these same 4 fine gentlemen were sitting there with their hands to the square before the Congress of the United States of America swearing that they had never targeted their insidious products to kids, all while they were, you know, the legacy and the track record, sponsoring the Winston cigarettes on the Flintstones show and everything. Honestly, I don't know how lightning didn't strike them, or they didn't just burst out laughing at their own bald-faced lying.
Yeah, but lightning's going to strike him on this one because we're going to stop him. I mean, again, cotton candy, grape Slurpees, yeah. Raspberry Red, these aren't marketed to adults. Adults are not buying these products. They're clearly marketed to children. 81% of the kids who start out vaping start out with flavored cigarettes. And the other thing, too, Doug, is you and I kind of went through maybe a you know, different stages in life where the Marlboro Man, as you were describing you know, many years ago, was a cool icon. And we got away from that to where smoking was kind of, you know, it wasn't socially accepted. And you did kind of have to hide it. And it certainly wasn't the cool thing to do. But that's changed once again, where kids are accepting this, and it doesn't have the stigma that it used to have. And when you have 1 in 4 high school kids in Utah who are vaping, I mean, that's remarkable. And it's not like they're going to quit doing it when they're 16. This is as addictive as nicotine in cigarettes. They'll do it their entire lives, and we just got to stop marketing to them. And that's also, Doug, why I was the leader on the T21 bill, saying you can't sell to kids that are 18. You can only sell tobacco products to adults at age 21. I think that the health benefits of that are just irrefutable.
Yeah, I agree. And I was in the same boat that you were in when vaping first came around. As a matter of fact, a really dear friend of mine who's up on the second floor, works in our production department. Boy, you know, he kept vowing, promising his daughter and everything that he would be quitting smoking. And honestly, initially, the vaping really, really helped my friend break from the habit. And so like you, and I think many of us, we thought, well, you know, it is the lesser of the two evils by far. But now it has become such an insidious tool for these companies to addict people at such a young age with the nicotine. And I applaud what you're doing and so many others, too. This is bipartisan. I love that back in Washington. Is the president hearing? I asked Mitt Romney. He had kind of that interesting lunch a couple of weeks ago with the president, and he apparently brought this up then. What has been your success, along with your colleagues, in this letter to President Trump?
Yeah, hey, get it to our desk, and we'll support you. The president doesn't want to market to children either. He understands that this is destructive for our society, destructive for our youth. There's been a bit of a mix-up in the Congress as far as, you know, you would think that it would be not very controversial to, for example, going back to the T21 bill to raise the legal age to buy tobacco products up to age 21. Well, there are some people who oppose that on states' rights issues and some other things. Mm-hmm. I frequently hear the argument, well, you know, you can serve in the military, you should be able to buy cigarettes. And I understand that we treat some of these young people as adults at age 18. But again, I just think the health benefits of this are so overpowering that it overcomes nearly every other argument. But the president and the administration have signaled to us that they would clearly support us if we could get him the right legislation.
Chris, I really appreciate you doing this, first of all, and second of all, joining us on the show today. We'll look for some opportunities to invite you onto the Sunday morning TV show, and I hope we have a chance to talk before Christmas time, but I hope you and your family have a great, great Christmas season.
You as well, Doug. You are just such a great model for us in the state, and I really mean that. And which I started out by saying that the public's going to Randy come back, but I look forward to Sunday morning, and Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you. Our 2nd District Congressman Chris Stewart here at KSL. When we come back, we've got a lot of things in store. Daniel Boyce will be joining us. What in the world is Represent Us? And a lot of people are watching a little video that's circulating. It's actually kind of billed as a mini movie. Has the credits and everything at the end of it with Michael Douglas. But before some people, that might automatically put people, well, he's a Hollywood elite. Let's talk about what the message is first and what's happening throughout the country and here in the state of Utah. That's coming up in just a few minutes.
Insights and analysis continue. Here's Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
First of all, let me address some of the texts that are coming in on our Utah Community Credit Union KSL text line. And it's been, you know, we've talked about many things so far, so there are a lot of things that are happening. It's so weird. I get this occasionally where everything seems to be in Chinese or something, and then at the end it does go into English. So apparently this was something about saving historic buildings, and it was all of the line after line after line of different symbols. I'm not fluent in any of the Asian dialect, so I don't know what that is. But at the end, it did turn into English and said, "Do all we can to save it." Referring to, of course, the Utah Theater. And this text came in and said, well, wait a minute. The LDS Temple is pretty old. How about tearing that down? Oh, can you imagine? Can you imagine? And even the remodel, some would call it a teardown, of the Ogden Temple was billed as a remodel. I mean, the thought of tearing down any of those edifices throughout the world or the country is almost beyond comprehension. And certainly there is such profound, not only historic, not only cultural significance, but religious significance that goes with that. But for those who are not of the faith, there would be those that go, well, hey, you know, if we're going to preserve buildings like that, we ought to preserve other buildings as well. Now, this is all privately done, of course. And the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has done some rather spectacular things when it comes to preservation. I mean, you look at the preservation of the old Provo Tabernacle, which is now the Provo City Temple, and others, Vernal, for example. But there have been some tragic losses as well, like the old Colville Tabernacle. I've told this story before that was, you know, you have those epiphanal moments when something that has always been of interest to you solidifies and becomes a lifelong focus. My love for and my advocacy for historical preservation started when I was very young. I can't remember the year. Could you look that up, Kellyanne? What year did the Colville Tabernacle come down? Because I can so clearly remember. I was at KRSP, so it had to be sometime between 1969 and about 1974. But I can remember I was reading the paper at KRSP out in Taylorsville at the time, and I remember seeing this image that is just emblazoned in my mind, where there's rubble and there is this beautiful old steeple that is just lying there. And I thought, what in the world is that? And then I read that that was the Colville Tabernacle. When was it torn down is what I'm looking for. But, okay. I'm getting lots of chatter in my head here. 1971. Okay, 1971. I apologize for that. 1971 is when that went down. So right there when I was at KRSP. And I remember looking at that image and thinking, oh, my goodness. And there were people that were just so distressed over losing that historic building up there in Colville. So, you know, our track record on every level, whether it's government, whether it's whatever, you know, we've had some serious oops. And then yeah, I mentioned the old Salt Lake Theater that came down years ago. I think we need to be so careful before we knock over these historic buildings. But boy, we've also got a really good track record of saving things as well. But this person, the text that came in was interesting. It said, "Doug, forgive me, please, but where is this theater? I've missed your mentions of it, and I cannot remember no matter how I rack my brain." You know, most of us wouldn't think of it. You know, most of us saw movies there, and it was built for movies. A lot of the old grand theaters were built for vaudeville, the stage, for, you know, musical presentations and so on. This was a Pantages Theater that was built for movies, one of the old movie palaces. But it doesn't have this big, beautiful, grand facade that some of them do. The facade, at least that I remember from being a kid, was just relatively, you know, kind of milquetoast on Main Street, on the west side of the street. There was call radio was on the upstairs of the second level. But you'd walk back this great big hallway, and then it just, there was this magnificent old theater. The Center Theater was a little bit like that, too. It had a cooler facade on the front or opening, but you'd walk down the big long hall, and then it would go into this big, more of an Art Deco type theater, where this is really old school. This goes back to the old, old days, and it's just nothing but just ornamentation and stained glass ceiling. It is absolutely gorgeous. But from the street, that's why probably it's not memorable to some people, because on the outside it didn't look that grand. But when you walk through those doors, walk down that beautiful hall, and then you walked into the actual theater outside, and the lobby was amazing as well. And many of us saw The Sound of Music there. There were other presentations. I remember seeing Earthquake there. Some of the old disaster movies that were so popular in the 1970s, remember those? So anyway, you know, who knows what might happen now, but boy, I'll tell you, when both of our guests have pretty much just said, wow, we just don't see a path forward, that's concerning. Okay, there's one thing that I just kind of quickly wanted to mention. You know, every now and then you get a little victory, even in something that is still tentative. And this one really caught my eye today. And it's regarding Dreamers. For anybody who's listened to me over any length of time at all, radio, television, the Dreamer Act that President Obama put into place. I remember at the time the Sutherland Institute came out and said, you know what, we might not be the biggest fan of some of the things that President Obama does or is doing, but on this one he got it right. Remember, the president recognized that there were people who were in this country and they came across when they had no choice in that matter at all. They were just babes in arms, or they were toddlers, or they were, you know, even teenagers that were being brought across the border illegally into our country. And there was something that just seemed so unfair in this great republic of ours when there was no fault at all. These kids knew nothing else. Many of them did not even know that they were in the country illegally. They participated fully. They were going to Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts. They were participating in the schooling, and they had friends, and they didn't know, many of them, that they were even in the country illegally. So this great nation, and this was the right thing to do. I have no doubt, nothing at all. We decided that for these kids, they deserve to have opportunity in our country. But then President Trump, and he's been all over the place on this, by the way, but when he basically made the declaration to end the Obama-era DACA program, the DREAM Act, we have about 700,000 young adults without legal status, including over 10,000 of them here in Utah. And we wanted to give them the opportunity to study and to work without fear of deportation until we, in our infinite wisdom, could actually figure out how to move forward on this. But it's been so contentious. And I subscribe to Mitt Romney's thoughts on this. I don't think anybody, well, I don't think the majority of people in Washington, D.C. even want to solve this problem, because they've used it as a wedge issue. They have used it as a fundraising issue. They have used it to pummel those who would run against them of their own party and of an opposition party. But we did get it right, and fortunately the Supreme Court stepped in, and the Supreme Court still, the United States Supreme Court, is considering whether the president can move forward with his plans to end the DACA program. But here in the state of Utah, the Utah Supreme Court, thank you, thank you, thank you for your adherence to the law, your sense of fairness and decency, moved forward with a rule Monday to allow undocumented law school graduates to legally practice in the state of Utah. How did this come about? Two Utah law school graduates, identified as Jane and Mary Doe, both are recipients of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, shielding them from deportation, allowing them to lawfully work in the United States. They got their degrees, and they got their degrees from two of our fine institutions. They graduated from Brigham Young University. The other went to the University of Utah. Both passed the bar in California. Just choked there, pardon me. Both passed the bar in California, but couldn't work in general practice in the state that they call home. Our justices, thank heaven, found that the Utah Constitution does not prohibit the court from adopting a rule that would permit those with DACA status, often referred to as dreamers, to practice law in the state of Utah. This proposed rule will go out for public comment until January 23rd, but after hearing from the state bar, the attorney general's office, law professors, legislative attorneys, and others, the justices wrote that they are confident that Utah's constitution does not prohibit the court from adopting that rule. So even while there's such a cloud over this issue, here in our great state, a state that, by the way, has been a leader in the legality and the compassion. I know I'm a compassion monger, but I've been accused of that, and boy, that's a title I will take any day of the week. Call me a compassion monger. I love it. But when you can meld the law with compassion, and a very fine lawyer in our state who's a dear friend of mine said, anybody who does not believe that compassion is part of the law doesn't understand the law at all. So thankfully, we did the right thing again in the state of Utah while the nation dithers on this issue. I just had to spend a little time on the last day that I'll be filling in on this program to talk about that. That is such an important issue. It is such a moral issue. It is such a legal decency issue. And thankfully, Utah generally gets it right on these things. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we've got much more in store for you, including I want to find out a little bit about Represent Us. What in the world is it? And a lot of people are watching a video that has Michael Douglas talking about our nation and kind of the state we're in right now and what maybe some of the answers might be. Oh, I know. He's one of the Hollywood elite, don't you know? Well, you know, he's also a United States citizen with a point of view. Let's take a break. We'll come right back.
Afternoon news and in-depth coverage with Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
It's interesting. A lot of people are talking about a video. It's actually billed as a short movie with Michael Douglas talking about the state of where we are now in our country and the divisions that are going on, and does advocate us all getting engaged and trying to make a little difference. And immediately I wonder if we have with Represent Us a footprint in the state of Utah. Daniel Boyce is joining us right now with the leadership board in our state. Daniel, welcome to KSL.
Hi, thanks.
Tell us about this organization, Represent Us. Where does it come from? How long has it been around, and what kind of footprint do we have in Utah?
Sure. So Represent Us is a national organization. It focuses on passing strong anti-corruption legislation all across the country in different states, cities, and the country in general. It's been around for a few years now, but it's newer in Utah. We're just getting started. I'm on the leadership board in Utah, and we're trying to make some noise and reform some things here in Utah, too.
I thought it was interesting in part of the presentation that I watched that was in that short movie, several things were proposed, and I found myself agreeing with, if not every single one of them, most of them. Number one, independent commissions to draw voting districts. Boy, that's been a hot thing in the state of Utah, and I have been totally supportive of that from square one. Two, illegal for lobbyists to donate to politicians. Three, every vote, a $100 tax credit to support their chosen candidate. This has been an ongoing issue. How do we fund our races so they don't become so tainted by the money? Then this one, put reasonable term limits on elected officials. Yeah, I didn't used to be a supporter of term limits, but I really have now. I think senators ought to be limited to 2 to 3 terms. I think the House representatives, I think it ought to be a 4-year term, good for 3 terms of 12 years total. So I'm behind that. Implement ranked choice voting to allow independent and third parties to run. Interesting. Secure automatic voter registration and to vote from home ballots. You know, we've taken some steps in a lot of these directions. What kind of response are you getting to some of these ideas?
You know, we're really excited by some of the steps we're taking in Utah. especially with the Better Boundaries Initiative we passed in 2018 that does work on instituting an independent commission to draw
The boundaries for various congressional districts and things like that. Yeah, no, and I've seen that egregiously abused here in the state of Utah for local races and certainly for the national races.
Right, yeah, and All Represent Us is about is trying to, you know, make democracy work better for everyone, whether you're, you know, Michael Douglas in Hollywood or if you're like me, just a regular guy in Utah. We want to feel like our voices are heard in Congress and in our local and state leadership. And it's important that we're able to not get crowded out by, you know, secret donors and people that would buy our politicians.
I'll tell you, I've been so concerned ever since Citizen United. It was bad enough before Governor Huntsman years ago put together the Commission for Strengthening Utah's Democracy. He asked me to be a commissioner, and we traveled all over the state just trying to find out what was concerning to folks and what was keeping them from participating and voting and stepping up to run. And boy, so many of these very things were on the very short list of things that concerned people the very most. And since that time, we've had the Supreme Court decision on Citizens United. I look at it right now, and in many cases, and this was kind of the case with Senator Hatch, he wasn't so much running against a candidate here in the state of Utah. He was running against Club for Growth and these great, big, gigantic national PACs that target, you know, somebody that they deem either not conservative enough or too liberal, too whatever, and they just pummel the state and pummel that candidate with non-transparent money. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and we totally agree. It's unreasonable that people, such small groups with so much money, are able to control our political process. You know, we're trying to, whether you're conservative or progressive or independent even, it should be you know, we the people that are making decisions in our public process, not small, powerful groups. And so that's what we're trying to fix.
It is interesting. Sometimes you wonder, and sometimes I know it's a little Pollyanna and maybe a little bit in fantasy land, but wouldn't it be interesting if everybody who was up for the United States Senate basically had maybe $100,000 to spend? I know that's ridiculously low. I mean, we spent here in the state of Utah in recent memory $10 million on a primary. And we're lightweights. You know, we're lightweights, right, compared to the big states. But if all of a sudden there was X number of dollars for a senator, X number of dollars for somebody running for Congress, and we just said, okay, go knock yourself out. You spend another dime above and beyond this, and you're out. And, you know, I know that's overly simplistic. I know people are rolling their eyes right now, but, you know, in kind of a perfect world, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. Well, and it doesn't even have to be a perfect world where we even the playing field. Like, one of the things that we're trying to put forward is, you know, where regular people get a tax voucher so that they can choose whichever candidate they want to support and then have it written off at the end of the year. And if, you know, there are, you know, 300 or so million Americans, if 300 million Americans are able to contribute a few dollars to whatever candidate they want, big super PACs and things like that can't even compete with the voice of the people trying to get their candidates forward.
Daniel, I was intrigued this morning when I learned about this. I'm going to watch it closely. I appreciate you joining us. For people who do want to get more information, at least what the goals and the ideas are, and I've only got a second here, where can they go?
Right. So if you want to find out more or get involved with our chapter, you can find us on Facebook. You can search Represent Us Utah, or if you want to get involved with our volunteer group or our email list, you can go to volunteer.represent.us/Utah on the internet.
Daniel, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your time.
I appreciate you finding time for us today here at KSL. When we come back, we might have a little chance to play some of the sound from that video that I have referred to. And again, I'm not here to advocate it. I'm here to discover a little bit about it, but it was intriguing, I have to admit. All right, let's take a break, and we'll come right back with more of the program. Stay with us.
Insights and analysis continue. Here's Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
Well, when we got the information on this a while ago, I thought, good heavens, you know, it would have been nice to get through the final day that I'm filling in anticipation of Lee Lonsberry taking the show tomorrow. He'll be joining us, by the way, at the end of this hour. But wouldn't it be nice to get through the day without a tragic killing in our nation? And as you heard in our newscast, this was the headline from NBC. One cop killed, two others shot in ambush, New Jersey active shooter situation. Oh my goodness. You know, it is so distressing that this somehow, it just can't, it can't become the norm. We can't become numb to this. Things that would have so shocked us, not just in a couple of news cycles, but for a long period of time, we would have been focused on this. What do we do? And now it's almost, I don't want to overstate it, but it's far too often by a long shot that we are reporting on these violent, outrageous ambushes, school shootings, killings, you know, and everything imaginable has been used as an implement to wreak havoc and death on people, from knives to bombs to automobiles to guns, you name it. So we'll sadly continue to keep a very, very close eye on this. Another tragic shooting in our country. I mentioned earlier when we were talking with Daniel Boyce, and we're just kind of shooting from the hip on this, but this is a video that's really making the rounds right now. It's actually, it runs with credits and everything at the end, almost like a little mini movie, but I watched it earlier, and I have to admit I was intrigued. I was intrigued with the concept because I think many of us are distressed. I told the story yesterday about a very dear friend of mine who is a very prominent artist who was saying this is affecting him so dramatically, and he loves politics, but has affected him so dramatically, it's almost been hard. Well, he said straight up, it's been hard to work in his art and in his craft, and had to go to some considerable lengths to get himself out of it and get back to the point where he could ply this amazing gift that he has. And I can't tell you how many times, even in just the last 3 months while I've been filling in here at KSL, not to mention in the days before on the old Doug Wright show, when I'd walk into the studio and just feel pummeled, just disheartened, like really kind of like with that shooting story and then the political environment we are in. So I have to admit that this got my attention this morning, and when it was suggested that I watch this, I did. And I'm just going to walk you through. It's almost 10 minutes long, but we're not going to play that much. We're just going to play a few of the highlights to give you the feeling. And I know many who are very conservative right now and have a healthy skepticism of Hollywood, and I share some of that with you. We'll just write this off. Bam! It's over. It's done. This person, one of the Hollywood elites, so I'm just not going to listen at all. Well, you know, I think that's part of the problem. If you want to know the truth, we are not listening to each other. We are not appreciating another's point of view. There's one point in here, and this is so visual, there's no way we can even play this and have it be meaningful. But at one point, a graph is shown, and it's shown both sides of Congress and what the Congress looked like, the balance in 1953, for example. It might have been 1957, I can't remember. But they showed how much back and forth and cross-party lines voting went on. And they said, well, you know, this happened, this happened. And pretty soon on a particular issue and in a particular year, The bipartisanship was amazing. They showed another year from the 1960s. Amazing. They showed another year in the 1970s. Amazing. And then they said, but how does it look today? And then they moved forward into the 1990s, and the bipartisanship just dropped off the chart. Still some occurred. Might have even been our Senator Hatch and Ted Kennedy that they were portraying. Nobody was named, of course, when they showed when people reached across the aisle in order to make something happen. And then they showed where we are today, and it's embarrassing. There is so little bipartisanship. And if anybody does go to the trouble to actually watch this video, pay particular attention to that. But let me just play a few things. This is where Michael Douglas kind of comes right out, and I know just the fact that it's Michael Douglas. I've already lost a few people here, no doubt. But listen to what he had to say.
America's political system has been hijacked to ensure those with power keep it. And for the rest of us, well, it's not so good.
What about that? What about that? There is truth to that. There is truth to that. And I see it happen in the political parties. I see where a very small minority of people who have learned how to play the game, maybe a little better than the rest of us, maybe in fairness to them, they're a little more engaged than the rest of us. But some of us, I would argue, have a life outside of politics. We have other responsibilities and cannot devote every waking hour, as some people do, to their political axe that they want to grind. Our system has been hijacked. And the overlap that used to occur, yeah, there were real differing points of view, but there was overlap. There were places we openly agreed. Then, I mentioned some of the things that this organization, which is, and I'm still trying to discover, so don't take this as a recommendation. I'm still looking into this, but some of the things they're saying are intriguing. Represent Us, the co-founder, Josh Graham Lynn, pointed out some of the things that they would like to accomplish.
The American Anti-Corruption Act. It fixes the system so government can work for you and your family, not just a handful of special interests and political insiders. Here's how it works. We have independent commissions draw voting districts. We make it illegal for lobbyists to donate to politicians. We give every voter a $100 tax credit that they can use to support the candidate of their choice. We put reasonable term limits on elected officials. We implement ranked choice voting to allow independents and third parties to run without spoiling elections. And finally, we enact secure, automatic voter registration and vote from home ballots. So now you've got more people voting and it's easier to vote.
Isn't that interesting? Some of those things we've been working on here in the state of Utah. Boy, I am a firm believer in the independent commission drawing up the voting districts. Now, here in the state of Utah, of course, unless we wanted to change the Constitution, we did the proposition that mandated this, but the ultimate decision to say yay or nay to it will remain with the legislature, which is prescribed by the Constitution. So, but progress has been made, and some other things in there seem very, very interesting. And Michael Douglas went on to talk about issues that just flat aren't being solved.
For the first time since the Great Depression, life expectancy in the U.S. is actually going down while it goes up in the rest of the world. We were once ranked top in the world for education. We've fallen to 27th. We can't afford life-saving prescriptions, and medical bills are forcing families into bankruptcy. Almost half of American families can't even afford basic necessities like rent and food.
He gets pretty wound up there, and then he acknowledges that later when he comes back for more of the conversation. So I'm still doing a lot of discovery on this. Again, do not misinterpret this segment. I am not here endorsing them. I'm just drawing to all of our attention, including me, you know, an interesting effort that is underway. And I looked at what some of the goals were, and I looked at what some of the high priorities were, and I thought, wow, some of those are the very things that we've been talking about here in the state of Utah. But again, what absolutely got me in this 10-minute video was the absolute biographics showing you how bipartisan we used to be, how willing our elected representatives were to reach across the aisle and try to have principled compromise. I've been listening to a tape of the book about the Great American Compromise of 1850, and it's amazing. Compromise is so critical. And usually when compromise does not happen, it's usually when people are driving wedges. It's when people are trying to separate. And there are many motivations for that, of course. But compromise is what makes this nation great. Principled compromise. That's the key. Principled compromise. Anyway, got my attention today. Let's take a break, and when we come back, I wanted to have a little fun with the Golden Globe nominations. That's going to be a hot topic on the movie show coming up this Friday. But hey, since the nominations came out yesterday, we better get on this. That's coming up next. And yes, my friend Steve Sales will be joining us.
The Movie Show.
You could just write your own roles, you know, write something that's as interesting as you are.
What are you going to do?
I have my own club.
On KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Now, probably one of two things are going on right now in your mind. One, you're in a nightmare, and it's the movie show. Or, you might have your days all mixed up, and it's really Friday. Well, I hope that the first is not the case. I know that the second is not the case. We just wanted to introduce all of you to the Golden Globe nominations that are out there. So I thought I'd invite my friend Steve Sales, who is my cohort in crime each and every Friday here at KSL, to quickly review the Golden Globes. Steve, great to have you here.
You woke me in the middle of my afternoon nap.
I know. For Steve to wake up before noon, and then to wake him up in the middle of his essential 2 o'clock nap. I know.
Literal siesta time. So.
Exactly. Siesta time. Okay, Steve, let's run through this quickly. Are you ready?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Best motion picture drama. Man, there are some great movies here. The Irishman, Marriage Story, 1917, Joker, and The Two Popes. Those are all incredible movies.
Yeah, and I would say that probably when we get to the Oscars, most of those movies on that list you'll see.
I'm
not so sure about the musical or comedy side, but we'll...
Yeah, there's one in there that's kind of interesting. So do you have a favorite on that list?
Well, I'm kind of leaning towards The Irishman or 1917. They just both have kind of epic feels to them.
You know, I have to admit, I could be comfortable with that. And I was amazed how much I enjoyed Marriage Story. I thought that was just outstanding. Still there?
Oh, sorry, you broke up there for a second.
Oh, okay.
You said you did like Marriage Story?
I loved Marriage Story, but
yeah.
The Irishman and 1917 are incredible. So we'll see, I guess, huh?
Yeah, well, the thing that really blows my mind, you go down to the actors and, like, who's not there?
Yeah.
De Niro. Like, what?
I know. Let's go to Best Actress in a Motion Picture Drama. Now, I have not seen Harriet yet. So, Cynthia's performance, is it Erivo?
Erivo, I think.
Yeah, Erivo. I have not seen that, but I intend to. Scarlett Johansson was amazing, Marriage Story. And, of course, in Little Women, that was an interesting thing. You sit there and you go, how many times can I see Little Women? But there were some really good performances in there. Charlize Theron in Bombshell. Boy, Dee and I watched that the other night. Holy cow.
I just finished watching that about 20 minutes ago, and wow, you're right. Charlize Theron was incredible.
Incredible. She plays Megyn Kelly. And the other performances in that movie, too, including John Lithgow as Roger Ailes. Oh, my goodness. Then, of course, Renee Zellweger for Judy. Those are all amazing performances.
Yeah, I was surprised that Lupita Nyong'o was not in that list for us, but, you know, sometimes memories kind of fade when a movie comes out too early.
And Best Actor in a Motion Picture Drama, Christian Bale for Ford v. Ferrari. I have not seen Pain and Glory. Antonio Banderas, Adam Driver, amazing in Marriage Story. Joaquin Phoenix, what can you say about his performance as Joker? And then Jonathan Price in The Two Popes. Again, remarkable performances, all of them.
Yeah, this is going to be a tough category. Somebody's going to have to make room for De Niro, though. I can't imagine him not making that list.
I know.
I'm not sad about Sandler not making it because I did not care for Uncut Gems.
Yeah, see, I haven't seen that yet. That's on the docket. I've been trying to catch up. Guess what I caught up on last night? Dolomite Is My Name. Okay, now I started watching that and I thought, oh my goodness, I'm not going to survive this movie. But haunting me in the back of my head was a little voice from Stephen Sales going, but Doug, you didn't stay for the arc of the movie. And believe it or not, there is...
That my little voice has finally crept into the back of your skull.
But there is an arc to this movie, and it ended up being kind of interesting if you can handle the blistering language and the sexuality in it. But really strange movie. Jojo Rabbit is in there. Knives Out, which we both loved once upon a time in Hollywood. Rocket Man. You know, just trying to decide between those movies. But I think I'd probably go with Once a Time in Hollywood.
Okay, this is ridiculous category because the only musical in there is Rocket Man.
Yeah.
And the only actual comedy is Dolomite Is My Name. Jojo Rabbit? Yeah. It's about the Holocaust.
I know.
How is that funny? And Knives Out, you know, a couple of jokes in there. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood as a comedy or musical, I'm sure Quentin Tarantino's like, no thanks.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to have to go through some of the other categories on Friday, but Best Motion Picture Animated, Frozen 2, How to Train Your Dragon, The Lion King, Missing Link, Toy Story 4. I think this was a banner year for animation. There are some great films in there. I wasn't the biggest
fan. One you need to watch also. You should have in your little pile there, I Lost My Body. It is an incredible animated film. I think it would, if the Oscars, well, I think it should be Toy Story 4 in that category based on this list.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's another one hiding out there that you're going to want to see.
And just really quickly, I'm going to run through these, and as I mentioned, we're going to flesh this out considerably on Friday. But Best Actress in a Supporting Role in Any Motion Picture, Kathy Bates, Richard Jewell, Annette Bening, The Report, Laura Dern, Marriage Story, Jennifer Lopez, Hustlers, and Margot Robbie in Bombshell, all amazing. Best Actor in a Supporting Role in Any Motion Picture, Tom Hanks, Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, Anthony Hopkins, amazing in The Two Popes, Al Pacino, incredible, Joe Pesci, incredible in The Irishman, Brad Pitt, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but you're right, glaring little void and vacancy there is Robert De Niro.
Yeah, he's the lead in Irishman, and that surprised me. I expected Pacino and Pesci to make for supporting. Brad Pitt, to me, is a co-lead in Once Upon a Time, so
right.
That's kind of misplaced. But, that's a strong list.
You know, we talked about Pesci on the movie show last Friday, but we always see him as the frenetic little guy, you know, semi-crazed mass killer, you know, or just goofball, whatever it might be in almost any movie he's in, everything from Home Alone to you name it. But in this movie, he is strictly amazing. He plays a different kind of character. I thought that he was, even though De Niro was the star, I thought Pesci's character was absolutely pivotal. If I had to vote between him and and Al Pacino, I'd vote for Pesci.
I agree. I think Pesci, this is his category. He's just so low key. Normally he's so frenetic. This one he's scary, dangerous,
right.
Low key.
Right. Steve, I look forward to the movie show. Well, that's coming up on Friday. We'll flesh this out a little bit more and thanks for letting me interrupt your afternoon nap.
Well, all right. Just once.
Yeah, that's right. That's one strike against you, Doug Wright. Yeah. All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, there's some guy lurking. As a matter of fact, he's coming in the studio right now. Some guy named Lee Lonsbury? What's this all about?
Insights and analysis continue. Here's Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
And the afternoon insights will not continue with Doug Wright because tomorrow things change here at KSL. You know, Lee, from Square One, when I got the phone call and they said, could you come in and maybe, you know, help out for 3-4 weeks? And I said, well, yeah, sure. And especially when I kind of found out what the drift was and where we were going and so on. I thought, yeah, absolutely. So here it is 3 months later.
I'm so sorry.
It's about time you got
I'm
here.
I'm so sorry.
What's the deal?
So here's the real deal. You have done me an incredible kindness, and I will forever be in your debt for hosting the show for the past little while, you know, after your own retirement. Because you have a whole show. You have a whole career in your rear view, and you came back here to bridge this gap. And the reason you did it is because I was
wondering why I did it.
Well, it's because you're a good man. I am a new father. I am the father of a five, six-week-old baby girl.
You're supposed to know to the minute. Don't tell your wife you don't know to the minute. Yeah.
And KSL, after we entered into talks and decided that I should return and that I'd be able to host a radio program, I said, all right, listen, I'm on board, but I need you to offer me one concession, and it is allow me a month to spend to get to know this baby of mine as it grows up and gets healthy enough to travel from Washington, D.C., where I had my last job, out here to Salt Lake City. And, you know, babies sometimes come late. This one came a little late. And you tack on 4 weeks to that, and that brings us to now.
We were all sitting back here tapping our foot, looking at our watches, going, come on now. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thanks for doing this. And I'm so excited for what's coming next. So what it'll be, myself, I'll be hosting a rate, which is surreal to say still.
Does this show of yours does it have a name?
It will have a name by show start tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
You're
not cutting it close, are you?
We'll announce the name as the show begins itself.
So you know what it is, and I can't wheedle it out of you?
That's right. I'm sorry.
Ooh.
I've seen you work on guys in the past trying to get the scoops. I'm going to hold fast on you. Tomorrow we'll announce it with the show. It will be weekdays, Monday through Friday, 12:30 to 3 o'clock. It'll be drawn from current events, the things that are happening around the state, the country, and the world. If they conceivably have an impact on the lives and livelihoods of Utahns, it's fair game, and we'll cover it. We want to do it authoritatively. I want to take a lot of the lessons learned during my years with you, sir. I want to be a place where folks can come and get a fair shake, and where they can share the highlights and sometimes, unfortunately, the lowlights of their careers and lives and the developments in the community. I want this to be a place where folks can come and hear authority. And I'm going to do that, sir, thinking back to the time I spent with you.
Well, that was a golden time for me. It really was. I mentioned this back when I retired one day. I seem to recall that somehow.
Yes, this has all been very straightforward.
But I mentioned how fortunate I'd been with producers. But, you know, on every great list, there's a very short list of people that were just outstanding. And the time, almost 4 years, that I had with you producing the show was golden. And it was an amazing time. Between people in TV last Friday, they were asking me about some of the highlights. And everything, the one that caught my, I always go to the most important stuff.
Sure.
You know, where I give the most precise and quick answer. But they said, so when you and Lee were traveling around the country, where'd you get the best food? I said, Atlanta.
Atlanta, that's right.
Remember?
White Castle?
That was Nashville.
And it was great.
This guy eats more White Castle weird little hamburgers than
anybody I've ever seen. Well, if you ever find yourself in a region where you can purchase a Crave case, I invite you to do so.
This guy, it's amazing. I'm looking here. You know, I mean, I'm the poster child for, you know, the balloons at the Thanksgiving Day parade. And you are over there lithe and slim and everything. This guy eats me under the table. But no, Atlanta.
What was so good in Atlanta?
Do you remember we were approached by the guy wearing the jacket or the shirt, and he was an Atlanta ambassador?
So kind. What a great guy.
It was so cool. And I saw that in Fargo, North Dakota, too, by the way. You know, a guy with the T-shirt going, hey, can I help you folks? Anyway, one of us blurted out, well, where's a good place to eat? And he suggested it to us. And it was kind of a steak and rib house. And we went there that night. And, oh, man, I can't remember who had what. One of us had steaks. I think I had ribs. They were outstanding. So, see, we've covered that most important part.
Sure, yes.
But this was all part of the adventure when we trotted all over the country together. This time, in 2012, we're following Mitt Romney, and, of course, all concluded down in Tampa, which was an experience I'll never forget, and, you know, the amazing things. That was a fun time.
It was a treat to be on the road with you, sir, and hopefully trips like that will continue. There are a lot of events happening around the country. All of it, I believe, has a great impact on Utah, and if it's within my power, we'll be there on the front lines.
You know, there's something to be out there and to be on the road. You and I had that opportunity a lot. But a lot of the really meaningful things, Boy, they happen right here in the studio. They happen right up the hill on Capitol Hill. They happen in our backyard. And, boy, look at the things you're walking into right now. We've got the impeachment process.
And I've got to cover – I'll need to talk about that a little bit.
Maybe.
All right.
Although every time I do, and I'll scroll down here and get – and it said – isn't there something else to talk about? I only devoted one little short segment just to bring everybody up to date, had the sound and everything else, what the actual articles are. And, man, I wasn't into this, you know, like 6 minutes before I got, isn't there something else to talk about? So you've got that. You've
on
got
that,
the
on
elections.
On that front.
Yes.
On that front, so we will become very saturated in impeachment stuff. It's unavoidable. It's inescapable.
It's a disservice if you don't.
It is exactly right. It is history in the making, and we will give it the due coverage. But I also know, as a former congressional aide myself, I worked for Rob Bishop for the past 5 years, that there is – you know, as we see all these proceedings taking place right now, there are also other committees that are debating and reviewing legislation that could potentially become signed into law and have an immense impact on, you know, all of our lives and the way we live them. I'm going to make a concerted effort to inform folks what else is going on those fronts. And tomorrow, in fact, we'll start on day one. We'll talk about some of the other things happening in Congress aside from this impeachment. Again, like you said, and it's fair, we will give the due time to the impeachment. I want to review some of the language. I think that's interesting. I got my hands on the actual articles themselves.
Right.
And, man, that's copied and pasted from the 1800s. I mean, that is some historic language, and it is some damning and condemning language, and I get chills reading it. And we'll look over some of that tomorrow.
You know, I your insights that you're going to bring from having lived in Washington D.C. now with your wife, and you know, with her work. You know, we've joked about this for years. If we really knew what Jessica was doing over
right.
the State Department, she'd have to kill us.
Right, right.
But with your insights and your time in Congressman Bishop's office, and you know, I think back to the time when we were back there fairly recently. I remember it just happened to coincide with the death of Jim Hansen, who was a mentor and a predecessor of Congressman Bishop, and how kind the congressman was to allow us to not only spend time talking about why we were really back there, but to take us into the chamber and to see the picture of Jim Hansen standing there. And Rob's obvious appreciation for and admiration of Jim Hansen. You know, there's so much more that goes on back in Washington than any of we mere mortals ever see. And you have an insight to that very few people do.
It's tough. I went out there thinking that I was going to walk into some kind of snake pit where everyone is at each other's throats. And, you know, in the headlines and on TV, that's the case. But when you get into the offices and when you get into the hallways and you get into the diners down there, you see that these folks actually do have many opportunities, which they take to work together and to get some stuff done. And I intend to you know, do the best I can from my unique point of view to shed some light on that.
I remember upstairs once when I was program director of KSL, Dr. Rodney Brady called me up to the 8th floor. You know, which anybody who's ever worked in this business, you go up the elevator and go, oh, what's this about, you know? And I remember he sat down and he talked to me like he was my uncle. And I remember one of the questions he said, Doug, where do you want to be and where do you want the station to be in 5 years? Where do you want to be and what do you want your show to be in 5 years?
It's an incredible question. I want to earn the respect of the listener. I want to earn the respect of the newsmakers. And I want all of those groups to think of my show as a place where they can go to hear honest, informed, and thoughtful both opinion and information. It'll be a mix. I have a news background. I also have a background and really a life lived with close proximity to talk radio. We haven't mentioned yet, I was raised by a man who's got almost 30 years in the talk radio business. My dad, Bob Lonsberry, is a host. He and I worked together for a number of years.
Right.
I learned a lot of great lessons from him. What I want to do in the next 5 years, 10 years, however long my career goes, is I want to be like my dad, and I want to be like you, Doug.
That's very kind. Lee, I am so looking forward to the program. I'm just thrilled with the way things have unfolded here. And, you know, it's going to be interesting. One of the first big assignments I had after I was hired at KSL, it was actually a couple of years after, but I was the production director at the time, and it was to work on KSL's 60th anniversary. Odds are you're going to be here on KSL's 100th anniversary on the air during that celebration.
Outstanding.
How many radio stations have been on the air 100 years with fundamentally the same ownership. And I, you know, when I project myself forward a couple of years, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing how KSL celebrates its 100th anniversary. And if I have any little twang of envy, because there's a lot of relief involved, but if I have one little twang of envy, is that you'll be on the air doing the show during the 100th anniversary of one of America's truly, truly great radio stations.
I intend to respect the legacy. I intend to honor the legacy, and I intend to do so with my own new, peculiar, and young-ish spin on things.
And Lee, you know, we have talked about this privately, but right. You know, I'll bring it up on the air so you can't weasel out.
Sure.
You know, Piper
yes.
is, you know, a certain age, and
right.
my new grandson, Conrad, will be exactly 3 months. See, a great grandfather, a wonderful grandfather, not a great grandfather. I'm not that old.
No, I believed it.
I know to the day that. So I think there's a potential here.
All right, well, let's matchmaker, let's do it.
We just want to talk dowry first.
Sure,
okay?
Yeah.
All right. Lee.
Well, how does the dowry work? I benefit from that, right?
You pay.
Well, I pay?
To get rid of that daughter of yours.
I thought the son's...
No.
Oh, I have to. All right, yeah. Well, I'll review history.
Yeah.
All right.
Lee, best of luck.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much.
It's going to be a thrill tomorrow to listen to whatever this show is going to be called. Sure, I can't crack that out.
Sorry, I'm a vault.
Wow. This guy's tough. All right, let's take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll just have a few moments to wrap things up, do a little bloviating, and then I'll look forward to seeing you on the movie show on Friday and on the Sunday morning TV show on Channel 5. Stay with us.
The afternoon insights and analysis continue. Here's Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
Well, thank you so much for enduring me over the last several months. This started last September. It was supposed to be 3 or 4 weeks. It ended up being about 3 months, but it's been a joy, and especially to be back and to be able to chat with our great KSL listeners. I have such an enormous respect for this great radio station and, honestly, this great radio market that we apply our craft in. This is an incredible radio station. It's been an incredible opportunity for me, and the fact that I've been able to kind of keep the seat warm for a very dear friend of mine and someone that I really believe you are going to enjoy thoroughly here on the KSL airwaves, and we'll continue on some great traditions and plow some brand new ground. Lee Lonsbury, it's been a joy. Thank you. Thank you so much for allowing me to be with you. Thank you, too, for the very kind comments. By and large, people have been so kind and have written some very, very nice things on our Utah Community Credit Union KSL text line, and I appreciate them, and they mean a great, great deal to me. I wanted to just leave with this, and we made some phone calls today to the Lieutenant Governor's office, and unfortunately, Spencer Cox was not able to join us. We reached out to the chair of the Republican Party, Derek Brown. He, unfortunately, was not able to join us. And this is something that, as a matter of fact, during the break, I was actually being interviewed on this topic. Saturday, Utah Republicans narrowly failed to repeal a party rule that would violate Utah election law, leaving the future of GOP candidates once again in limbo. What this is all about, it's this ongoing struggle. Governor Leavitt used to correct us when we were in editorial board meetings and so on, when somebody would say, well, the Republican Party is fighting against SB 54. And I remember the governor, former governor, was on the speakerphone, and he chimed in and said, may I just make a correction? This is not the Republican Party. This is not the GOP. This is a very conservative core of the Central Committee of the Republican Party that is causing the issues here. The State Central Committee needed 91 votes to repeal a very controversial bylaw that strips party membership from candidates who seek to gain a spot on the ballot through the signature. And remember, for the old supporters of the caucus convention system, when SB 54 was brought about as the compromise, because it was really probable that through the initiative of Count My Vote, that it would have been on the ballot, Utahns would have overwhelmingly supported it, and the caucus convention system would have disappeared, period. Kurt Bramble and others in the legislature said, look, and the governor himself, they said, no, we like the caucus convention system, and in order to save that, how about if we do a compromise here? Remember, I said earlier that that's what keeps the gears of government lubricated and moving. It's principled compromise. Kurt Bramble, to this day, I am so appreciative of his efforts here. And Count My Vote decided to back off if there could be provided an alternative course onto the ballot. And that happened. With X number of signatures and fundraising, you can get on the ballot in the state of Utah. Well, the central core of the Central Committee, they've been fighting this. They've driven the party into debt. They have driven it, I believe, into some real dubious grounds here by constantly fighting this. And once again, so what could happen here in the upcoming election, depending on how this is handled, if they insist on supporting the bylaw that basically disenfranchises a candidate from the party, they could disenfranchise themselves as a party. So we'll obviously be keeping a close eye on that, and I'm sure Lee Lonsbury will be following up on this as well. Once again, thank you for inviting me into your homes and cars, and we'll see you on Friday on the movie show at KSL.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.